knowledge fight. And Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Demon Feast.
Ooh, right out the gate, changing things up.
I figured it was going to be a race for one of us to say it, so I might as well get to it real fast.
Yeah, you defeated me there. Yeah. That was well done. I got snook attacked on. Yeah, I know.
Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
Hi, I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
And I would like to start the show by apologizing for not knowing that was, or not recognizing that was Chuck Mangione, the king of the flugelhorn.
Yes, we were both very
roundly shamed.
Ugh,
I mostly only know Chuck Mangione from the Children of Sanchez soundtrack.
Right.
So I did not recognize "Feel So Good," and that's on me. Anyway,
it's a great song.
Yeah,
no argument there.
Sure,
Dan
Jordan.
Quick question,
Jordan.
What's your bright spot today?
My bright spot today. I'm going to loop back to the Eco Challenge show that
All
I was
right.
watching.
Okay,
because I was thinking about it. I finished it and I realized what I liked so much about it as a structure. It was all inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
It was all positive.
Yeah.
Everything about it was people trying their hardest with people they cared about and trying to finish.
Right.
Like, the first half of the show had kind of a focus on what team was going to come in first, and that was, like, pretty, you know, something to be proud of.
Sure.
But then, even after the winner, like, everyone was still just as excited about, like, are these people going to finish?
Yeah.
And just, like, everybody, it just, there's... goodness.
No, it's fantastic.
You know, and I think that there's so many shows that are about kicking people or, like... you know, being sort of, there's a Schadenfreude aspect to them, and it was devoid of any of that. Whenever somebody had to quit or got hurt, it was a tragedy.
Yeah.
When people pushed through and tried as hard as they could, but still didn't make the cutoff, they were congratulated for never quitting.
Right. Like, of course.
It's just great.
Yeah.
Made me feel very, very warm.
Yeah, there was we watched a documentary, my partner and I, on about this woman who was running the Iditarod for like 20 years, and she just could not get further. You know, she was really good. She cared a lot, and then all of a sudden she starts coming in second, over and over and over again.
Brutal.
And she's like helping people. She could have won like twice, but instead somebody got trapped behind her and she was like, I'm gonna go save them. You know, like, it was that kind of shit. And you're like, it's not about winning, man.
Yeah.
It's about this lady.
That's great.
Yeah, that's what it's about.
Yeah, and even with this Eco Challenge, there's like a lot of people who are old time adventure racers who are like past their prime.
Yeah.
And just seeing them
like
just
Muttley and
it's great. Anyway, I recommend it.
Yes.
It's the final table of outdoor racing. To dig real deep.
No, I wonder why there wasn't a second season of that. Could have been the absurd production values.
Maybe. a little on the pricey side for a
overhead was
show.
High. Overhead was high.
Yeah. So what about you? What's your bright spot?
My bright spot, I'm going to follow up a few weeks ago. I had said that we were starting to eat healthy and do these this meal thing and all that stuff. I have lost 5 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it's also nuts because I'm the one who needs to lose 5 pounds. You're plenty thin.
I know. My partner is very frustrated with me, and I realized what happened.
You need to build. You need gains, bro.
It's not about eating healthy for me. It's that the food tastes fine.
Uh-huh.
So when I'm done, I'm done.
Sure.
You know? Like, I used to order out all the time, and I like the taste, so I just kept eating it.
Yeah.
And now it's not that good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of it tastes okay.
Yeah. But you want a serving.
Exactly. I want one, and then I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah. You're full enough.
It's crazy how you how people just eat like that.
It's not like a giant thing of mac and cheese.
No.
You're like, I'm going to eat all of it.
Yeah, I don't need it.
Huh?
Yeah, it works.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
I say begrudgingly.
Yeah, I don't know how much congratulations. I think it's more of my bright spot just because it's very weird.
Mm-hmm.
I'm you know, I'm not like bragging.
Sure.
It's weird.
Sure. Hey, yeah. But I think that maybe having a different relationship with eating that's like
it's
that's
way
not
healthier.
Like you hurting yourself.
Yes,
is maybe positive.
It's way better. I haven't beaten myself with a bag of Cheetos for a while. Yet.
Well, hooray. So, Jordan, today we have an episode from the past.
Yay!
We're going back to 2003 because, quite frankly, I was in a situation where I've got some side projects I'm working on, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, on Monday's episode, Alex was talking about advice about maybe you should kill your family.
Right.
Like,
right.
I don't know what is more timeout worthy than that. That was one of the most fucked up things imaginable. And actually, yeah. I went back when I was editing the episode,
uh-huh.
and I looked up that story that you mentioned about the guy who killed his brother and
yeah.
his brother's wife.
Yeah.
And it was shockingly very similar to that. And I was a little bit disappointed that I didn't pick up those pieces as clearly
mm-hmm.
in preparation of the episode, but it did seem like that was kind of what he was touching on a little bit.
Yeah.
And it was there's a weird feeling that I have, and that it's partially that, like, whenever Alex says he's going to eat his neighbors, a million views on Twitter.
Right.
When he's like, maybe it's time for you to think about killing your family if they like vaccines.
Yeah.
I didn't see that go viral.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't see anybody point that out.
It is fascinating.
I didn't even see him saying it's a demon feast go viral. That could have.
That is a real bummer that he exists in that space where people love to like infantilize him
yeah.
as being, oh, he's the guy who says crazy stuff like eat your neighbors. But then it goes, and there's really only a tiny difference in tone of voice mm-hmm. between it's time to eat your neighbors and it's time to kill your family. It's the tiniest difference.
Yeah, I think there's also a difference between being like, hey, if my family's starving, I will cook and eat my neighbors. And hey, maybe it's time to think about, hey, look, I don't judge what families do. It's a family affair. You might have to kill your family if they like vaccine.
Well, I mean, what if you're really hungry? You might have to eat your family too.
Well, that's true.
There's always a loophole in the, oh boy.
I will say that sometimes it gets disheartening.
Yeah.
And I'll push through that and we'll get back to the present day on Monday.
Sure.
But I was just like, I can't imagine something worse than this. And I can't imagine how mad I would be if there is something that's worse and no one is like dealing with it seriously.
No, all forced contrarianism aside, that's really fucked up, and I'm glad we're not in the present.
So, Jordan, like I said, we're in the past.
Yes.
And we will get down to business on that. But first, let's say hello to some new wonks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, this is just a theme, I guess. Farting for my life in a demon feast. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Next, Martin, year 11 is the policy wonk anniversary. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Martin.
Yeah, and that's great because I do think that we should try and brand one anniversary as the policy
that's
wonk.
The policy wonk anniversary.
So on your, I mean, look, the suggestion is 11. So
right.
On your 11th anniversary, now you have to annoy your partner.
Right.
With really in-depth things about tax code or healthcare law.
Yeah, I don't think we could pull off 666 as the wonk anniversary.
No one lives that long.
I don't think that would be, I mean, not yet.
Sure. Once we get these life extension technologies,
exactly.
Then we'll see.
You know what? We got to do it now. We got to control it now before it happens.
Right.
Yeah.
I usually am not in favor of some of your ideas. This one,
this one
I'm all about.
Nailed it.
Yes. Preemptively, the 666th anniversary is the policy
wonk. Wonk anniversary, yes. It is law.
Yeah. Next, Kevin, thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. Next, Jeff, thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Jeff.
And we got a technocrat out there, so what's up, extra saucy Mike? Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why are you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare InfoWar on you.
Thank y'all.
Yes, thank you very much.
Now, Jordan, the 23rd of June, 2003 is what we're going over.
Okay.
And I will admit, I wasted a bit of my time listening to the episode prior to this.
Yeah, the
22nd. Which was the 20th.
Oh, the 20th, okay.
Because that was over the weekend.
Gotcha.
It's a repeat, and I didn't realize it for a while.
That's not fair. Not fair.
Doesn't speak highly of some of his broadcasts in 2003.
Yeah.
It took me a second, and then I'm like, wait, why are you defending yourself about being drunk on a boat yelling at people? I remember this. Like, you're not doing the exact same conversation again. I know, you cut your hand, and people have started a conspiracy about it. So there's not a ton. That's going to be all that interesting for us to go into here, but there's a couple of points that I found very illuminating.
Okay,
and I'm excited to get into that.
Excellent.
But first, here's an out of context drop that will come in very handy in the future.
You're a traitor, Dan.
Oh man. Oh man.
God damn it.
Come on, Alex.
This is going to round out our zoo crew fucking thing forever.
Cuz now we've got a negative, we've got a positive.
We don't even need us anymore.
No,
let's be real.
No. Alex, you're really dumb.
You're a traitor, Dan.
Come on.
See what I'm saying?
Come on, Alex.
This is terrible.
Who do you think you're talking to?
No. We're not doing vaudeville.
I'm talking to Dan in Illinois.
We're not doing this. Shut it down.
All right, fine. So here we go. We're going to start on the beginning of this here June 23rd episode. And this clip, I think, is really illustrative of why it's dumb to try and talk to someone like Alex or try and correct him. Because I think that you're never going to really get through. He's talking about the Charles Sell Supreme Court decision.
Right.
And we've talked about that quite a bit in our 2003 episodes so far. Here's his take on people who try and correct him about the ruling.
Last Monday, the Supreme Court ruled they can grab you for any reason, forcibly drug you, and that it gives them total police state power. Now, most of the headlines I saw in the newspapers and what I saw on television said that, the Supreme Court has moved to restrict force drugging of individuals for trial. I read the ruling. It said as long as there's not a great chance the medication will kill you, they can do it. So they have to fill out a little form and dot an I and cross a T. Takes about 60 seconds, literally, and that's it. They just got to have a prison doctor say this drug's fine, and it happens. But the average person's emailing me going, Alex, I heard your show. You said that the Supreme Court said they can force drug. That's not true. Well, I'm sorry for folks out there that don't know how to read federal rulings or even read deeper into the articles themselves, but the headline may say they restricted force drugging. But the meat of the articles and the ruling shows that they basically made it unlimited.
No, that's not true at all. These random people who are emailing Alex are absolutely correct. But what's fascinating about this is at least in 2003, Alex seems to have an awareness of this distinction between headline and body of article.
Yeah.
That distinction is gone in his present-day awareness.
Yeah, him saying that you need to read beyond the headline made me want to start barking viscerally.
Well, it's insulting.
It's very offensive.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Have you no decency, sir?
Not cool.
Yes.
I think that these people who are emailing him are correct, and he's just you can give him exactly the right information and he'll just be like, no, you need to read deeper. What you don't understand is how to read these documents.
Yeah.
They actually mean the opposite of what they say.
Yeah, if somebody's telling you you're not reading something right because you're engaging with what it says,
right,
then you are what do you say?
Right.
You
have to then go to first principles.
Right.
Like, do we agree that A
is this
means
even
A?
A book? What are we talking about? Out here.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we talking about a book that you've written in the margins of the book I'm reading?
It's a fundamental disagreement about like what you can get, like how information is taken from source to receiver of information.
No. It's what the documents don't say. Okay, well then leave me alone forever.
Yeah. Good. Do info jazz.
Yeah.
I don't care. Do that over there, but yes. Don't fucking pretend.
No.
Don't pretend that's anything other than an art form.
Right. It's about the notes you don't play, baby.
So Alex has a big story on this day, and this is fascinating to me.
Okay.
This is a huge problem for Alex, and he is on the exact wrong side of this issue.
Of course he
based
is.
On his political principles.
Naturally.
Wayne Jeffrey, a 7-year veteran of the Fall River Force, was fired May 29th after an internal investigation prompted by an unsigned letter that claimed he smoked tobacco at a party. Oh, wow, now unsigned letters, you lose your job. A 1988 state law that police officers and firefighters are subject to immediate termination if they are found to be using tobacco products either on or off duty.
Really?
And it goes on, it's our policy to investigate any accusation thoroughly regardless of the source, Police Chief John Solza told Fall River News Herald. The statute as written provides us no room for discretion. Oh, so see, now a fifth grader draws a picture of his father, who's an army captain in Iraq. This just happened a month ago. Draws a picture of his father, the captain, with an M16 during art class. Police were called, he was detained, and expelled for the year.
I don't know about this art school story, art Whoa. Class story.
Whoa, this art class story got out of hand real quick.
It did, but this story is really interesting about this guy, Wayne Jeffrey, who
okay.
is a police officer in Falls River.
Right.
And so, look, Alex is trying to present this as a police state kind of thing. There's a zero tolerance for all this stuff. You get jammed up.
Right, 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 right.
And I don't know what the art thing, like exactly how it relates to the police guy getting fired for smoking, but
that's obfuscation.
The Fall River Police Department has a zero tolerance policy on smoking among officers, whether they're on or off duty, for a very specific reason. I wonder if you can guess it. Like, can you workshop in your brain why that might be the case?
I don't know, because in Falls, they're the only cops who carry around hand grenades at all times.
Yes. They all have cartoons, TNT.
Yeah, I was going to say, they've all got
dynamite.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's because they don't want to allow for any insurance claims that present things like smoking-linked heart or lung cancer as being work-related. So if you're disallowed from smoking at work and you have one of those conditions, they don't have to pay out in the insurance.
You're right. I should have assumed capitalism was the problem.
Yes.
I should have immediately assumed, somebody needs money somewhere along the line. Yeah.
This is a fun case where Alex and I are both against this thing, but for completely different reasons. I'm opposed to the rule because they clearly don't care if someone smokes or not. They're just trying to, save money by not having to pay some cop's health care.
Right.
Alex is opposed to it because he's created a fake version of the story to present, it's just yet another example of the New World Order taking over. It's a human resources issue.
Jesus. That's so fucking annoying.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Is there nowhere?
It's wild. So anyway, Alex seems to think this bizarre notion that in this case, the cop should have to go on trial.
What, I'm sorry, what now?
Yeah, it's nuts.
The cop should have to go, okay.
Statewide, only two other officers have been fired since the law went into effect, but Jeffrey's case was the first based on an anonymous tip. I don't think they drafted this law. They intended it to be used in this manner, Jeffrey said to the Boston Herald. If you're charged with a crime, you get to face your accuser. I never got to face my accuser. Well, sorry, Jeffrey.
It's not
under Patriot Act, they can arrest Alex Jones, and my wife wonders where I am 20 years later when they find me in a shallow grave if the feds don't take the time to put me in a meat grinder or a vat of acid.
That has nothing to do with this.
Do the feds put people in vats of acid?
Whether they do or not is irrelevant. This is a human resources issue.
I'm not allowed to face my accuser. Sir.
Not a crime.
Sir, you just don't work for us anymore. Nobody's putting you in jail.
Right. I got in trouble back when I used to work at a Subway because one of my coworkers saw me eating a meatball and snitched on me.
Yeah.
I did not have a chance to face my accuser.
Yeah.
Before I got sent home. For the shift. We're told, you're done for the day. Get out of here.
You're out of here,
stop
kid.
Stop eating the meatballs. I did not get
you
due process.
You should have had a trial. How dare they? Are you going to assume that you've eaten the meatball? It could have been anybody. You can't trust that eyewitness account.
Right. Dirty snitch.
You could bring in... It's been proven that eyewitness accounts are easily adjustable. You know, like, yeah, this is bullshit.
Also, I got a tip, very good source,
yeah.
That this guy who had snitched on me was on the management's payroll.
All right. That's two vaudevilles. That's two vaudevilles.
So, look, I mean, Alex is like legitimately convinced that somehow this smoking of that the cop did is a crime that he needs to have due process for.
Right.
It's so ridiculous.
I like it.
Now, I've got all this earth-shattering news of incredible import, but I decided to start the show today with the cop being fired, the veteran police officer, an anonymous letter said someone saw him smoking at a party, tobacco, and they say zero tolerance. When we don't need to have witnesses, we don't need to know who the person is, they just said you did it, and that's the end of it. See, anonymous, this is how it works now. And the cop says, wait, I'm innocent until proven guilty. I have due process. You have to tell me, you know, who said this, or you have to have a trial. And they go, no, we don't. We don't have to do anything. Because this is the new world order. Because
it's the cops.
There's no right to due process based on employment. This is a completely silly thing that Alex is claiming, although maybe it's not the worst idea in the world. Maybe it would be good to get rid of at-will employment, where workers are seen as disposable commodities that can be replaced in a second.
Maybe we should replace that with a system
where
Alex,
a company wants to fire somebody, they have to prove their case in court.
I don't think that Alex would appreciate... I think you're going...
That seems to be what he's saying.
No, I know that's what he's saying, but I don't think he's saying that.
I think that Alex would totally be in favor of this, considering how huge an infringement that would be on a business's ability to operate within the mythical free market, and considering how many big government processes would need to be put in place to make sure businesses adhered to this and gave their employees a fair day in court if they wanted to fire them.
Ooh, goddamn. Alex versus Millie Weaver in court on the gate of gates. Yeah. Oh, I want it. I want it. I want that deposition real bad.
In the case of Alex Jones versus David Knight for firing... Alex calls Steve Pachenik.
Our star witness, Steve Pachenik.
Yeah, nonsense. It's a human resources issue. Yeah. This is so dumb. If the cop feels that he was fired wrongfully, he was wrongfully terminated,
sure,
then he can sue. And then at that point, the court can decide whether or not it is valid for him to be fired for smoking when there is a statute that says you can be fired for smoking.
Sure.
You can challenge that statute eventually, but it doesn't have anything to do with whether or not the person who snitched on you smoking was anonymous or not.
Yeah.
Like, it's you don't have due process. You don't have to face your accuser. You're not innocent until proven guilty. None of this matters.
I mean, also, he's making it sound like there was an anonymous tip and they went to the cop and they were like, man, somebody said you've been smoking. And he's like, nah, I've never smoked before in my life. And they like pulled his jacket open and pulled out a pack of Marlboros. And they're like, ha, we got him. Mm-hmm. Put it in the evidence locker, cuffed him behind his back and escorted him out of the building. It was just like, hey, man, you can't smoke. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't hard.
So anyway, he spends a lot of time on this story. And I just think that there's a fundamental problem with it, that if he spent a tiny bit of time thinking about what the issue he's mad about is, he'd realize that this flies completely in the face of every weirdo conservative idea he has.
It is funny. The idea that if this one thing, like if he got his one wish on this, the unintended consequences would tear down his entire house of cards and belief systems.
Yep.
Like if he accidentally got one wish, like a genie just popped in, hey, today I'm going to grant whatever the first thing you say on your show is. This would be the accidental labor revolution that we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, look, I think that some modicum of this is probably could be good, but I think that if you had to have a court case for everybody you fire, I don't think that's productive.
I don't necessarily think that might be productive.
I think what Alex is advocating for accidentally is actually too far.
I don't know. Maybe if it was that much of a hassle to fire somebody, we'd just be trained better and treated well.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I used to manage a theater, and if I had to go to court every time I wanted to fire one of these kids, it would have been a pain in the ass.
That would have been fun.
So Alex spends a good bit of time on this. And I was starting to feel like maybe this is going to be what the whole show is about. Maybe I'm getting a little bit, feel like I'm walking through some mud.
Sure.
And then this happened, and I saw the light, the sun coming out from behind the clouds. I was like, yes.
We talk about stuff that actually affects you and your family on this show, but I will say this. There's been over a million Harry Potter books sold.
Here we go. Let's do it.
And we time to get also into it. Now have Hillary selling around 500,000 books. I mean, who really cares, folks? Well, I'll say this. I didn't spend much time on Harry Potter last week. I just said, look, the difference between Harry Potter and J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings is, in Lord of the Rings, it doesn't teach you how to perform magic. It isn't following the different levels of a Wiccan cult.
Oh, man. Oh, man. That's great.
The difference between Tolkien and Harry Potter is that Tolkien wasn't a reference book for magic.
Right.
Duh. I mean,
if the Harry Potter books actually taught people how to do magic, we would have a huge problem on our hands. Society would be untenable.
Okay, let's just stop there.
You know how many magic kids there would be?
Before we go any further, this show couldn't happen because every 5 seconds I'd just be like, Expelliarmus, and knock the fucking microphone out of your hand just for the joy of it.
I wouldn't exist because I've called people who like Harry Potter books dorks.
Yeah, you'd be gone.
Show. I'd be gone.
You'd be gone.
I'd be in a cornfield somewhere.
It'd be terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do like this because actually what Alex is saying is I'm old.
Yes.
My generation's version of sci-fi is better.
I don't understand things that the young kids like.
The fantasy that appealed to my child imagination is different than this generation's, and that alienates me from the pop culture, and I feel sad about this.
Why don't young people like the things that I like anymore?
Hey, guess what? They do.
Oh, no.
A lot of them like Lord of the Rings.
No, they like Harry Potter now. I'm disconnected.
They like Lord of the Rings because it's safer. It doesn't teach you how to do it.
I mean, you know, to a certain extent, I guess I agree with the point.
Well, I mean, think about it. In Lord of the Rings, you need the ring. In order to do all the...
You absolutely do not need the ring to do magic. How
that's a great
dare you?
Point.
How dare you?
There's wizards.
What are you talking about? The main character dies and comes back to life through magic.
Wait.
Gandalf.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't consider him the main character.
Well, I mean, he's the
Tom
only one.
Bombadil.
Tom Bombadil is the main character. You're right.
That's what a bunch of dorks have told me.
Hey, doll, dairy doll, ring dongadillo. Dan.
Do you like Dune?
I do like Dune.
No, I mean, did you like the movie?
I loved it. It was great.
Great.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
So one of the great things about Dune is it doesn't teach you how to do magic.
Actually, I believe the David Lynch version does teach you that if you yell loud enough, you can explode stuff.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So Alex has read 2 Harry Potter books.
Which ones?
Up to this point, there's 5. The 5th one just got released.
All right.
Right in this 2003 range.
Yeah, House of Secrets.
No.
Oh.
No, House of Lies.
House of Cards.
House of Cards. So yeah, Alex has read 2, and here's what he thinks about it. He's wrong.
I've read 2 of the Harry Potter books, and it is classical occult training. And I've got one big piece of evidence to show this without spending a bunch of time on it. They released the Harry Potter book on the eve of the summer solstice, the high holy point for occult practitioners.
Wow.
Which are the ones in Harry Potter?
Well, I thought he was talking about the first one, because wouldn't it be like the bringing about the... Like, it would have to be the first one was on the solstice.
Yeah, that would have to be the thing.
So that one, the Philosopher's Stone, was released in 1997.
Uh-huh.
The summer solstice was June 21st in 1997, and Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone came out on June 26th. I don't know how close you have to be to the solstice for it to be a conspiracy, but I guess 5 days is good enough.
There's a grace period, yeah.
Sure.
Nobody expects, like, on the day. You know, you get, like, there's a 3-day late fee, there's a 5-day grace period. Yeah. It's like paying rent.
But I like that that's the big piece of evidence.
Oh, that's
Alex
the
has.
Hugest piece.
It was released on the solstice.
I don't know. Maybe if you learned how to speak Elvish in Tolkien, you'd be able to do magic. Maybe Alex just sucks at reading Elvish.
It wouldn't be the only language.
Yeah.
So There's more.
Well done.
Thanks. There's more evidence just than this one book came out on the solstice. Yeah, yeah.
And they released the other books on other high days, the winter solstice and on the summer solstice.
The second book, Chamber of Secrets, came out on July 2nd, 1998, which was not a solstice.
Mm.
The third book, The Prisoner of Azkaban, came out on July 8th, 1999.
Starring Gary Oldman, rest in peace.
The fourth book, The Goblet of Fire, came out on July 8th, 2020. And the fifth book, The Order of the Phoenix, which had just come out on June 21st, 2003. That was a summer solstice.
Hey, there we go.
We finally found
we
one.
We got it. The,
on
fifth,
the fifth
one.
Book. I think that if
that's the new Bible. I mean, on the fifth book, the J.K. Rowling rested.
Here is how you create a grand conspiracy.
Okay.
You release four books.
Yeah.
And then on the fifth one, release on the solstice.
Yeah, that'll trick them. Yeah. They'll never see it coming.
Just have a bunch of other like summer release dates when, you know, maybe kids are getting out of school and they'd have plenty of free time. They wouldn't have to read books for school. And
you know,
maybe it would go on summer reading lists that parents would be more apt to buy bulk of them.
Is he mad also at like The Tempest? Like at what point, what magic is fine and what magic is not fine?
Huh.
You know, like are we, is he mad at Macbeth? Because I'm sorry, I can't say that in here. Ooh. Obviously
we're not on stage.
Yeah. Like because they, oh see, if you rhyme while stirring
bubble,
then,
bubble,
yeah then
trouble.
You can do magic. Macbeth taught children how to do magic.
I mean, it's the script for the magical ritual is right there.
Everybody knows it.
Yeah I don't know. I wonder if the Harry Potter thing is Alex just hates education so much. It's a school.
Even books about school make him furious.
I wonder if that's it. Like, he actually thinks that, like, well, if you read this, it's kind of like going to Hogwarts. You know, you kind of...
you know who my favorite character in fiction is? Hmm. Samwise, because he clearly never had an education.
He didn't do shit.
He didn't think about shit.
I would love it if, like, you just got to sit and talk with Alex, and it turned out that he, like, just got a little bit drunk one night, was leafing through the Harry Potter book, and he came to the Sorting Hat, and he got so scared. He had nightmares.
He could see in my thoughts. No!
He had nightmares about the Sorting Hat.
I think I'm Slytherin.
Oh, no.
I can't get it out of my head. I think I'm Slytherin. They say I want to be Gryffindor. I'm supposed to be courageous, but I think I'm Slytherin.
I got
to
kill that
hat. Oh, I'm going to kill that fucking hat. No one will ever know.
And you know, just sort of looking at this and then recognizing that nowadays Alex is probably pretty into J.K. Rowling.
I love TERFs. Yeah. You know what? The thing that's different about Tolkien and Harry Potter is that Harry Potter taught people how to be more racist. Mm.
I do think that there's something of a fun, you know, like, hey, this is teaching kids how to do evil magic. And, you know, 18 years later, I'll defend the... the transphobia of the author who was teaching kids how to do magic.
Man, unreal.
Yep. So it's not the only thing that's demonic, though. You know,
what's,
I mean,
that?
Harry Potter is pretty demonic. But there's other things.
I mean, you know the story, but when I was 10 years old, or when I was 11, when the first book came out, my church got a hold of it, and they gave it to me. They were like, read this to see if there's any real magic in it.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
They were like, is this okay to give to children, or is this... demonic, I guess. So it was like, yeah, this sounds so familiar to me.
That's fun. I do remember hearing about that. Like I remember hearing stuff about people who had that. I never experienced that like firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
I think by the time those books were coming out, I feel like my mom was even reading them.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like that extremism didn't touch our sort of religious community.
I will never forget this because it was a weird moment of both like growth and insane cognitive dissonance. But coming out of the first movie, mm-hmm. I went and saw it with my family, right? And my dad said, who is super conservative Christian, my dad said, like, after the movie, he's like, you know what? I liked it because they solved the problems without using magic.
Oh.
That was how they won in the end.
That's nice.
Is not using magic. And I was like, and the reason that that's both a good interpretation and insane is because he was afraid to see the movie because there would be too much magic in it.
Sure.
And it would be evil.
Yeah.
So it's like, Yeah. Okay, Dan. Yeah. Okay. All right. Step.
I worked at the movie theater when one of them came out. I don't remember which one. I think it might have been like the third one, maybe second or third. And a friend of mine who worked at the theater with me saw it. He came out and he was like, "Don't watch that movie. It is so fucking scary. It is so scary." And I thought, like, well, just, all right. Okay. And so I went and I watched it like a week later. Yeah. And it wasn't scary at all. It was like, what the fuck was going on? You said that was so scary. He's like, oh, I was on shrooms, man. Like, yeah. Right.
Well, then never mind.
Yeah, I can see why that might be scary.
I would like to see that movie then.
Fair enough.
I will watch that movie.
So Harry Potter's a bit demonic.
Sure.
But there's other things.
Oh. I mean, turn on the radio. Listen to rock and roll, folks. And you know, I'm going to admit it. I listened to it years ago. I like it. You know, it's got
bold.
This powerful sound. But
bold
I don't
to admit
listen
that.
To it anymore. But a much healthier and happier person. You listen to it. It's half the songs talk about how they're in service to Satan, people. You're supposed to just laugh and go, oh, it's just funny. It's just for having fun. Yeah, look at how these people's lives end. So that's all I have to say about Harry Potter.
Okay. Good summation.
All I have to say about Harry Potter is Keith Moon died.
Uh-huh.
All right?
Yep.
Do you get it?
Uh-huh.
Do you get it now?
I do like the idea of Alex being like, I repent of rock and roll.
He's not that old here.
No.
This is 2003. He's not old enough to be like, I don't listen to rock and roll.
He was born
anymore.
In 74.
What are we talking about?
He's 29.
Oh my God, go away. I don't listen to rock and roll.
I repent from rock.
Oh man.
I stopped listening to it. I'm a happier and healthier
what the
person.
Fuck do you do? You just listen to Kris Kristofferson by yourself.
And
that's not bad.
He also sings along with a lot of like pretty demonic leaning rock later in his career.
Yeah.
But we'll leave that aside.
Yeah.
So Alex has a guest coming on the show, Scott Goldbrunson. Scott Goldbrunson. I don't know. Alex mispronounces it like 30 times.
Great.
And he calls himself out for it, and they have a nice moment of like, ah, it's fine. But anyway, he's going to have this guy on, and in the preface of talking about how he's going to have him on, he points out that he disagrees with him.
Okay.
Again, we do have a guest coming up, the author of The Silent Invasion, in the next hour. And we'll get into how our government's bringing in foreign troops. Of course, the author's basically saying that they're all here and the government doesn't know about it, or well no, it's official. They're sanctioning it. They're setting it up.
I got pumped when I heard this because I was like, okay, so you're going to have two people who are both arguing that foreign troops are being brought into the United States, and they're going to argue about whether or not the government is behind it.
Right. 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 Right.
This doesn't happen. This does not pay off at all.
It doesn't?
They don't argue. They just talk about how foreign troops are coming. They're going to
get us. That's disappointing.
I know. It was like a balloon deflating.
Yeah, that's like a Marvel versus DC argument, you know, in terms of my surreality is better than yours.
Yeah, and then in the end, you don't really even argue about them.
Yeah,
you're just
that's
like, they're both pretty good.
Hey, comics are great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what's great? Cartoons. I like people who draw.
Let's do that.
So Alex is not too surprisingly opposed to affirmative action.
Not surprising.
Right around this point in 2003, there were two Supreme Court decisions that were regarding affirmative action, and especially regarding school admissions processes.
Right.
And these two cases, essentially, if you took both of them together, what the conclusion that they came to was that having a point system or anything where, like, if just by virtue of being of a minority group, you got a point, or if there were quotas, that's unconstitutional.
Right.
Schools can't do that.
Right.
But having some consideration about the diversity and the makeup of your university in terms of admissions processes narrowly is okay.
Yeah.
That is not something that is considered unconstitutional.
Sure.
So Alex has a bit of a weird take on all this. And here's what he's got to say.
I mean, I think it's wrong if you've got a white student who's got a 98 and a black student who's got a 95 and they give it to the black student. But let's be honest, there's an even bigger form of discrimination in the good old boy network for bureaucrats and elected officials' children and people like George Bush who had a failing grade but got into Princeton, got into Yale, excuse me. So we see this over and over again. So, you know, it's not just the minorities that get preferential treatment. Let's be honest about that. But Supreme Court did rule that with the undergrads, they cannot overstep people who have better test scores. Two wrongs don't make a right. That happened because of extreme pressure. But it's funny how they always get you to focus in on what the minorities are doing and what they're getting, but never on how the fat cats get the real preferential treatment. So there's a lot of different forms of affirmative action going on out there. That's what we do on this show, is we show you different sides of the equation.
Showed me a side there for sure. Certain side.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that appeals to some people, rightly, in as much as there are these fat cats and the,
sure,
you know, the legacy folk who are getting all this shit handed to them on a silver platter.
Sure.
And I think that there's, you know, fair criticisms about that. And I think that some people might hear a clip like that and get tricked by that being very appropriate and fine.
Yeah.
And then accidentally agree with him being like, these minorities are also getting all of our shit.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. Yeah. You know who is exactly like big fat cats? The people that are crushed underneath big fat cat's boots,
sure,
at all times.
Yeah. What Alex is saying is basically that there is this sort of three tiers. There's the fat cats,
right,
the minorities, and then the whites.
Yes. I can't believe that it got to this.
Yeah, that's essentially what's behind the argument that he's making.
Right.
I think that it's pretty easy to miss that if you're just listening. You're like, you know what? Yeah, fuck that. The fat cats that is the real kind of affirmative action.
Yeah.
You could hear that and not realize that you're internalizing a fairly racist perspective along with it.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
Fairly racist or super racist?
Sometimes I'm very generous with how I speak. So Alex takes a call, and this guy, his dad, he's a doubting Thomas. He's the sort that would see the holes in Alex's hand,
uh-huh,
metaphorically. The hole would be Alex's documentary about Bohemian Grove.
Sure.
And then this guy, his dad, wouldn't believe that Bohemian Grove is all evil and devils.
Right. So we're stigmating that. If you,
I went afar afield with that metaphor.
Okay. All right.
But this caller, his dad would be doubtful, even if he saw evidence of something. And
gotcha.
Alex doesn't think that's cool.
Matt in Arkansas, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. My dad is a minister, and I was telling him about the Bohemian Grove, and he told me something that kind of shocked me. He said, you know what? Even if I see it with my own eyes, and I have all this documentation and quotes from books, and I see all this proof, I'm still not going to believe it. Pretty sad, huh?
So your dad basically said that he will believe the lie and take... The Bible says they willingly take the delusion and willfully say, I want the lie. You know, some argue, sir, that's the ultimate sin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty
I'm not
going
to sit here and tell... Yeah, oh, that's wow. Ultimate sin. Some interpretations that willfully knowing something's evil and saying, I don't care, I accept it. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Your dad not believing me about Bohemian Grove's the ultimate sin.
Some people say that's the ultimate sin. Uh-huh. And his response to that was, oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Who would have guessed that? Some people would think that.
Pretty sure it's blasphemy against the Holy Spirit. I think that's the unforgivable sin. Maybe it's not believing Alex.
I mean, Jesus said it was honor thy father and mother. So in this particular circumstance, Alex is 180 degrees away from who is committing the ultimate sin here.
That's not surprising.
Yeah.
I would guess that this is a telephone problem where the dad is actually saying, I don't find this evidence compelling. I think that this is bullshit.
You can put as much bullshit in front of me as you want.
Yeah. I'm still not going to buy the argument that's being presented because
exactly.
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit. Yeah.
Anyway, this caller, it goes off the rails a little bit because he has another question to ask Alex. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Another question. The flatulent tax. You know, with the animals.
Yes,
down there.
Reuters.
Yeah. Does that have anything to do with like the Jewish protocols? Because that's what it sounded like to me. And I was wondering, what was your thoughts on the Jewish protocols?
I don't know who wrote that, and sir, I just go with what UNESCO and Kyoto protocols say, and it's about a takeover of and getting us all into compact cities. This is the cover for getting people off the land into the communal farms, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Man, if you can take a whiff on a softball question like that, that is how you do it.
Wow,
that's pretty bad. I think that there are some people who don't know a ton. Maybe you're a lay person and you might not know about the protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Right.
Maybe you don't know about it, or maybe you've heard of it and you're like, I don't know who wrote that. I have no idea. But if you're someone like Alex, where
you know,
a good half plus of your audience believes that they're real and they are a plan to take over Western culture or whatever, you have kind of a responsibility to have a position on it.
Yeah.
You kind of have a responsibility to, especially if you're not convinced that they're real, to be able to tell this caller, no, this is a forgery. This is not real. It's complete shit. You can't just play like the game of like, I don't know, maybe it's real, maybe it's not.
I mean, we did an entire episode on it. The idea of somebody asking me like, oh, do you think that this methane tax to kind of hopefully do something about climate change is actually the Jewish protocols trying to kill us all? I would be like, listen, you got to use what you need to believe what you believe.
Uh-huh.
That's probably irresponsible.
Hey, look,
part.
I don't know.
Hey,
don't know.
Man, they could be, but I'm not saying one way or the other. Yeah. I'm not familiar with what you're talking about.
You have a responsibility to be familiar with it when you're, you know, this deep into a career in conspiracy.
Yeah, especially
I would say.
Especially when your worldview is essentially swapping out Jewish people in the pros and cons of the Elders of Zion and just putting in whatever I want on
globalists.
A given day.
And I think also you have a responsibility when you recognize that this person is probably younger. You know, he's talking about his dad and like an argument with his dad. He sounds young. Like this is not necessarily a person who's fully formed in a lot of ideas yet.
Right.
You're there's a responsibility that's just being dropped.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's disgusting.
You know what's super weird about this? Sometimes going back in 2003 is on some of these calls, you know, you hear a younger voice and you're almost like trapped. Or at least I suddenly have this like cut to January 6th.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like if this dude called 20 years ago,
it
is entirely possible.
It could be like 35, 36.
And he could have been there.
Yeah.
You know, like how that's crazy that this dude could just call in Alex fucking Jones. I mean, that's fucked up.
Well, actually, I know that this guy wasn't there because he was actually in court over firing, over termination. he was trying to.
That's a solid alibi.
Yeah.
I'll give him that one.
So Alex gets to this author, the guy who wrote The Silent Invasion, and here's his intro.
I just talked to our guest during the break, and we'll probably hold him over somewhat into the hour, next hour, let him ride shotgun with us so I go to calls earlier in this hour and kind of space out the information. He's written a powerful book called The Silent Invasion. He's Scott Gulbranson. I'm pronouncing that correctly. I always pronounce names wrong, even my own. I'm from Texas, folks. I'm just joking.
Ha-ha. Great joke.
It's a good joke.
That's a great joke.
So Alex and Scott, their big point is that tyranny is here.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to face it. You got to face it. Sometimes even these dudes who do this deep research into stuff.
Sure.
Sometimes even they can't believe how bad it is.
It's so bad.
It's so bad.
It's bad.
We go to urban warfare training operations with Dutch and British and Israelis and Germans, and they admit it's for gun confiscation. I've got it on video here domestically. It's for America. The role players are screaming, I'm an American, no, not the camp. And now it's come out that they're hiring, this is AP Reuters, folks, all these former KGB bosses to help run Homeland Security. I mean, Scott, this is so crazy. I have trouble believing it, even as it's happening. Did you go through that in researching for this book?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I'll be honest, I still have days where I don't want to believe it. Days that were, you know, growing up as American and believing in the ideals that our country was founded on, I still to this day just sometimes want it to go away, but that only lasts about 3 minutes, and then I realize, no, I can't do that. It's happening. And I think a lot of people do just put it out of their mind and say, no, it can't be happening. That's impossible. This is the United States of America. This is the beacon of freedom throughout the world, or what used to be. And so when I was researching the book, I wanted it to go away. And it took me
It took me a long time to come to grips with the fact that these people were telling the truth.
Yeah, man, he had an eye-opening experience that showed him, like, what was crawling under the rock. You
right.
know, you ignore, because you see the rock on top, you don't see all the bugs underneath and what
right,
have you.
Right,
but he
right.
looked under there, and you can't ignore it once you see it. So you kind of would expect that, like, you know, he'd continue his path as a New World Order researcher after this point, after 2003.
Well, I mean, yeah, he looked under the rock. He can't go back.
Yeah, you've got to get the word out,
yeah.
like Alex has.
Yeah, you're at the tip of the spear now.
Yeah, Scott's currently the host of a radio show and podcast about the Las Vegas Raiders, the NFL team.
Well, that's nice.
It seems like he's been pretty able to go back to...
I wonder how he feels about the Gruden situation.
He's not... I don't know. I think that he's seems to have closed his eyes quite well.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
So, I think that...
It is really fucked up, though, that... The DHS is a horrific organization, you
sure.
know? Like, he's right, but there's no KGB. There's no hidden shit. It's just they're fucking cops out of control, man.
Sure.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
You're right. It's just not a good book.
And sensationalizing it in the way that folks like Alex do does a disservice to legitimate criticisms and pointed critiques.
It's just fucked up.
Yep. So they talk about immigration a little bit here, and I think this is bad.
I have some of these. They didn't make it in this book, but they'll be documented in my next book. And that's these campaigns that they have all over the world, but also in Mexico, telling mothers in Mexico in Spanish language documents, if you're pregnant, you can get better care in the United States. Go over the border, even if you're arrested. Because they know that once they cross over the border, the way our system is set up, that people can have a child here and the child becomes a citizen of the United States and their medical costs are zero, but they cost.
And our government wants it because these uneducated, ignorant people that don't know about freedom will vote for gun control, vote for bigger government, and it's somebody to pay into the Social Security system. So it's elaborate. Both parties are involved in it.
Yes.
Alex is just like pretty great replacement to even
yeah,
2003.
That's
you know?
Wild.
These dumb people will vote the way the Democrats want them to. And
they've been great replacing us since the beginning.
Man. Yeah, I think that sucks. I think that's a horrible perspective that Alex has.
Yep.
Ugh.
They're bringing in educated people because they know they won't learn enough to...
And they don't know about freedom.
I mean, just what an insane way to view people.
I would suggest that if freedom actually does exist in any real sense, everyone inherently knows about it.
Yeah.
You would sort of just viscerally be able to understand what freedom is.
Exactly.
It wouldn't be some kind of elaborate private property document that you need to understand in order for freedom to really be captured.
I don't even need to go to first grade to know that when I'm in first grade, I am not free. I am trapped in school. Like, that's it, you knew it.
I also think there's like kind of two perspectives that you can take, and that is, if you hear that there are people, let's say in Mexico, who are being told that if they're pregnant they should risk fleeing to the United States and getting arrested because they'd get better health care in order to protect their child, you can go down the path of, like, look at these manipulative fucks.
Jeez.
Or you can go the other direction and look at it like, wow, that is a terrible choice to have to make. What can we do about the situation that exists? You know, it's kind of a difference of perspective.
Yeah,
they choose to blame as opposed to address.
How can you hear that sentence of, like, here is the choice that someone is faced with when they get pregnant? Either maybe die where you are, or maybe die somewhere else, but somewhere else, maybe your baby has a better chance.
Yeah, you and your baby have a slightly better chance.
There's no way to look at that in a rational way without going, well, anybody who's just, by getting pregnant and existing a threat of death, there's a huge problem there. So before we ever even get to the United States, what the fuck is going on? Then next, wait a second, are you telling me that if you're trying to do better for your baby, the country will just go, we're gonna have to cuff you and then send you back to die? That's fucking out of control.
May I present to you a thought? Freedom.
Ah, shit. You know what? I don't think anybody's free in those scenarios.
So Alex's dad, as we know, is a dentist.
Yeah.
And he's done some work for some CIA fellas. But it turns out he was not. He had a lot of clients, it turns out.
Okay.
My father's a dentist, and one of the top Border Patrol people is his patient.
Mm-hmm.
My dad brought this up to him about the foreign troops getting shot at the bounties, and he said, oh, yeah, it's all true.
Yeah.
It's foreign troops massed down there, Chinese, Russian, Czechoslovakian.
That's remarkable.
Really? Really?
Yeah, man.
Really?
Yeah, he's the dentist to all people who could have information that Alex needs.
So, before there were any lieutenant colonels,
right.
All the lieutenant colonels got their dentistry work done by Papa Jones.
Definitely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, one.
Right.
So the Czech army is there.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Yep. Why? They're at the border?
I'm shrugging.
They're at the Mexican border?
To invade the United States and to shoot border people, like a border patrol people, on U.S. soil. That's part of the conspiracy.
I mean, does the Czech Republic get a cut of the United States after they overthrow us? Like, I don't think the Chinese and the Russian government are going to, like, carve out Iowa for the Czech Republic.
You can have Maine.
You can't. Yeah, you can't trust that. If I'm the Czech Republic, I'm saying no, sir.
Oh, I assume it's kind of a combined effort towards the one world government.
Sure.
So, like, at that point, there won't be countries.
Naturally. That makes sense.
So, you got to kind of look at it from that prism.
From the larger perspective. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
I think that if Alex is telling the truth, which he's not, his dad should be in deep trouble.
Like, oh, yeah.
This has got to be a violation of some confidentiality.
Oh, man. I mean, everybody who goes to his dad should be in very big trouble. Like, why are you going to Alex Jones of InfoWars' father and telling him what, quote unquote, secrets?
Is there some kind of an agreement? I don't know this. Maybe we have a dentist listening who would know. I would assume that there's some kind of a professional obligation,
like
if you're on the gas or whatever and you're like passed out and you're babbling and stuff,
right,
to like keep that to yourself, like doctor patient confidentiality kind of thing.
Yeah I
would think that, especially if you're the top Border Patrol person or in the CIA.
I you know, it's like the videos where somebody's driving their kid home and they're all drugged up from the dentist and they're like blah, 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 you know, like
horrible.
You know who doesn't make those? The dentist. While you're drugged up in the chair.
Although, now I want to see a YouTube video of the top guy in the CIA in the back seat of a car.
Why don't we all just hunker down and find out where the top people of all the organizations get their dentistry done?
Well, I know. Alex Jones' dad.
That can't be all of them.
Yes, it can.
They can't all fly to Austin.
Yeah, it can.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
He gets around.
He's really good.
Yeah. So this Scott guy, I did not think that there was much to his perspective, his very standard kind of UN invasion, New World Order-y nonsense.
Sure.
And I also didn't feel like I had much respect for how he was describing his process.
Yeah, I had one of the sources in my book. I got in a blowout with him one time because he was very afraid, didn't want to come forward with some information. I said, look, and he said, look, they're going to kill my kids. I said, you know what? They're going to kill your kids anyway. So let me tell you, either you're going to fight and get more people on your side, let people know what's happening so that we can all come together as a country as we have in the past and fight this so that our kids have something to live for.
I don't trust you anymore.
Look, I can't do this, man. They're going to kill you. They're going to kill my kids. I'm going to kill your kids if you don't put this in my book.
Yeah, I think that's a little bullying.
Yeah.
I don't feel like this is how you should treat sources.
Fuck you, man.
Yeah.
You coward, you loser.
Right. I demand you produce the thing that I know you must have. Because you're already assuming what the source has in terms of materials, and you're behaving as if. I mean, it's just, this isn't how the game is done.
No, that's very rude.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Yeah. So another thing that's rude is bathroom etiquette. You know, like a lot, having bad bathroom etiquette, you know, I think a lot of the time it's generally understood. You don't want to talk to people too much.
No.
In the bathroom, everyone can mind their own business.
Right. When you're standing at a urinal and somebody chooses the one specifically next to you and starts up a conversation, you're
weird.
Like, this is out of strange. You're out of pocket here,
right,
sir.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that Alex actually has a pretty decent complaint here if this did happen the way it did. But he ran into a globalist in the bathroom.
Okay.
But you need to understand something. I was talking about the threats I've received over the years. Really, one of the lightest ones was last year when I was out in L.A. taping the Conspiracy Zone, and then we all had our own dressing rooms. But right off the main floor of the stage, right before we went on, I went in a bathroom, a communal bathroom, larger one, and there was Lionel Chetwynd, the guy that just made a made-for-TV movie where Bush is the big hero. He's the head of Bush's committee that's taking over the media, humanity and arts, with the propaganda. And he goes, he looks at me and he goes, "You're Alex Jones," bugs his eyes out, makes a fist, points his finger and says, "We're going to get you." I followed him out and I said, "Chetwynd says he's going to get me in front of some of the staff." And he goes, "Oh, I'm just joking." So that's on the record.
It's on the record. Yeah, man. We're going to get you.
That would be the highlight of my life.
It'll be hilarious.
I want to be in a bathroom somewhere and just suddenly be like, "You're Jordan. We're going to get you." And I'd be like, "Yes, yes, you will."
If you're a listener of the show and you ever run into Jordan in public, don't say "we love your show"
or
anything.
Absolutely not.
Threaten him.
Threaten me. Say, "We're going to get you."
And it's also important that you bug your eyes out.
Otherwise, we won't know for sure it's us.
Based on Alex's stories about like seeing demons teleport into people and stuff, I think that his credibility in terms of the details of this story are maybe a little bit sketchy.
Eh.
Although I could, like, I don't know who this guy is, this Lionel fella is, yeah. But like, if he has a good sense of humor, maybe he was fucking
with
Alex.
If he was joking, that's a solid joke.
Yeah.
That's a great joke.
He was.
And if he was joking, and if it would happen to me and they were joking, I'd be like, "Fuck yeah, that was great, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You nailed it.
We're going to get you.
100%. Hey, we're going to get you too."
Like finger guns
or something? Totally. Yeah. Totally. You walk away, you bump elbows, and you have a great time.
Yeah. Amazing. But so whatever the case, probably something rude happened in that bathroom and I'm not for it.
That reminds me so much for some reason of Paul F. Tompkins' ghost in the bathroom, the monster in the bathroom bit. I think it was off of Freak Wharf where he's like, I you know that scene in horror movies where the guy goes up to the sink. He's in a real lull, and he's just like, "Oh, man, I just need to get some water on my sink, just cool my face off." And he looks up in the mirror. Ah, there's a monster behind him!
Mm-hmm.
And I was always scared of that. And then I realized one day I was in my own bathroom that if that were to occur, the monster would have to say, "Excuse me."
Mm-hmm. Fun.
Yeah.
So after we have this protracted, boring interview...
Mm-hmm.
Alex has some more calls, and one of the things that I've started to notice is, especially during this period and even up till the present day, Alex has like standard callers.
Mm.
Like Carlos is a guy who calls in all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you had Old Man House Phone, and the reason that we could pick out something like Old Man House Phone is because he called in a bunch and he always got through.
Yeah.
There's this weird British guy who Alex seems to not like much who calls in quite a bit.
But he gets through.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot. And then...
We really do appreciate him coming on the show. Let's talk to Dan in Illinois. Dan, you're on the air.
Doing.
You're on the air with Scott... who is fighting the New World Order. Go ahead.
He had a conspiracy about Polish hot dogs. People putting ketchup on them.
Okay.
Dan in Illinois had a lot of thoughts about...
obviously.
Why are you going to have a hot dog when you can have a brat?
Man, I want your origin story to have been... to have called in one time when you were real young and not remember the exact date and then to discover it on the show. That would be incredible.
First of all... No, it couldn't have been.
It couldn't have been.
No. Well, first of all, I wasn't in Illinois. We've already established.
No, that's definitely true.
I would have to be pretending to be in Illinois.
Right. Sounds like you at the time.
If there's a Dan in Missouri who's really into ska, then maybe maybe we'll have a conspiracy
all
going
right
here.
Dan in Missouri, you're on the air. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay.
Hey, Alex, is it cool to wear rainbow suspenders? Get off the line, kid.
What kind of riot is your favorite? Mine's a zoot suit.
That's more swing.
I know. Come on.
So we have one last clip here, and I just think it's a bad summation of this episode.
You bet. Thank you. This show's been so good, I'm going to re-air it tonight, 9 to midnight central, on the shortwave at 5.085 and 6890.
He re-airs every show.
Yeah.
It's not like this show is so good, I'm going to re-air it. No, you re-air Every night your show is rebroadcast.
It's like at the end of an episode of Seinfeld, they're like, we're really going to play this one a lot. Uh-huh. I bet. Yeah, this one's going to go on review.
This one's so good, it's going on syndication.
This one's
going
to be syndicated. This one for sure is going to be syndicated.
Yeah, so dumb. I think that this episode was a little bit light on actual content. Not a whole lot going on.
Right.
But that cop story, I think, is pretty funny.
Yeah, very
and
funny.
Then Alex's discussion of Harry Potter is... Anytime we get a nice cultural touchstone,
yes.
It's always really important to just experience it, whether it's his take on The Watchmen, yeah. Or his take on Oblivion,
yeah.
His other take on Oblivion, his third take on Oblivion.
there is an alternate universe where... fucking Siskel is the guy on InfoWars, and Alex and Ebert have been working together for years.
Sure. I think that would be great. If Alex's career does fall apart, you know, in the coming months and years, I would like to extend an olive branch and do a podcast with him where we talk about movies. We just talk about,
man,
what do you think this is about?
What do you think this movie is? Here, I would legitimately watch a movie with Alex and just be like, okay, now I want you to tell me the plot of this movie.
Yeah.
Just tell me what you remember happening in order. I just want to see how your brain interprets
it.
Yeah.
Is this real?
What is real,
right.
And what is not real?
Is this secretly real?
Is this the fiction part or is this the nonfiction part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like that. I would start a movie podcast. Yeah. First episode, Dune.
Roundtable discussion.
So, Jordan, we come to the end of this, and I have to say that Harry Potter is evil. Don't read it.
Can't.
Because if you do, you'll get magical powers.
You learn too much.
I would also like to say, if someone invites you to a demon feast... Say no.
You have
other plans.
It depends on, and like, ask at the very least, ask a follow up question, mm-hmm. like, what type of demon feast will we be feasting upon demons?
Are you on the menu?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You need more context for that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But we'll be back. But until then, Jordan, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight and @gotobedjordan.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm Daryl Rundus.
You're a traitor, Dan.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.